is Bad Boys and Beyond with your hosts, Mike Payton and Keith Black Trudeau.
That's it, baby, I'm foul.
Hey, I'll put it in the front page, back page, middle page, wherever headliners, column one or two, we will win game two. Good back it off, we will win game two.
The game's over and the Pistons have won the world championship.
Welcome back to Bad Boys and Beyond with your hosts, Mike Payton and Keith Black Trudeau. We have got a fun guest, a guest that I've been on the road with this guy, been in stadiums with this guy. Actually, first let me just introduce Corey Woods, everybody, from M Live. Very happy to be here. And I was just thinking of a story about Corey. I didn't mean to rhyme there, but I pull up to SoFi Stadium 2021, and I'm dressed, I think, nicely. I think that I had nice khaki pants, I had some nice shoes on, a nice button-up shirt. I smelled
That's
good.
LA,
I was,
right?
Yeah, LA. I thought I was looking good. I thought I was looking right. This guy, Corey, walks in like a full-on like three-piece suit, dressed to the nines. And I immediately felt bad about myself. You and Eric like both pulled up in suits, and the rest of us were all just looked like slobs.
No, and then I looked at Eric's suit and I'm like, dang, R.E., you killed me. So yeah. I didn't even understand the feeling.
The ESPN money. Get you every time.
It looks good.
So you've been, as we talked about on, you know, before off the air, you're kind of doing like a dual role for M Live right now, where you cover the Pistons and you cover the Lions.
Yes.
Super busy time of the year, obviously, for you, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no such thing as a day off, because when the Lions don't have something, then the Pistons have something. When the Pistons have something, you know, it's back and forth. It's like, you know, doing like a double dutching. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
So, the Pistons, since the last time Keith and I talked, the Pistons have not won a game. It's been a real rough trend here lately. And, we're interested to hear kind of what your thoughts are on what's going on. Is it the turnovers? Is it the injuries? Is it what's happening here?
First off, I think I'm going to start off with the injuries. Right now, we don't know what Monty Williams' system looks like for real, because he's not out there with the team that he envisioned going into training camp would be on there for start of regular season. I mean, Livers is out, Bogdanovich is out, Monte Morris is out. Now with Bogdanovich and Monte Morris, those are two key guys that you need, because what is this team lacking right now? At least one of the many things they're lacking spacing. Those two guys right now are your mid-range or three-point guys. They're out. So that right there is a monkey wrench. Then, I mean, you know, over the past couple of weeks, Alec Burks, Jaden Ivey's missed the past couple of games. Jalen Duren missed last game. I mean, the injuries are piling up. It's almost reminiscent of the end of last season, where from like, I want to say maybe February to like from March to April, it was just a litany of injuries on top of each other. So I think right now injuries is the biggest thing. Because again, that's affecting that spacing. But also, I'm just curious about this starting lineup, because I almost said Dwayne Casey. I know Monty Williams is preaching defense discipline. And the thing I'm seeing with Killian Hayes in the lineup, I got to go give him his props for last game. What can you say? He was the best Piston on the floor against the Warriors. But besides that, I mean, the guy was going into the game shooting sub 30% from beyond the arc and from the field. And when you have a guy like Cade Cunningham, who's a consummate facilitator, and you're pairing him with people that just cannot shoot, it's going to cause some problems. So I think once they kind of get their guys back, they're going to be able to figure some things out. And then just curious to see how this whole Jaden Ivey situation plays out. I know he's been sick the past couple of games, but you hear whispers out there. Don't really want to get too much into it because it's nothing substantiated. But I mean, he was in a starting lineup last year, and now he's on the bench for a guy that people thought would not be with the franchise that long.
Yeah, so I kind of look at it from the opposite perspective. To me, the thing that's most frustrating, aside from the injuries, which we can all agree have really crippled this team, I actually looked up. This team has not had a clean injury report in 2 years. I think March of two seasons ago was the last time that they did not have anyone on the injured list, and that's crazy. But going back to the defense, the Pistons statistically, I know they don't get up a lot of threes, but percentage wise, they're one of the most accurate teams in the league shooting 3-pointers. Killian Hayes is actually shooting better from three than Cade Cunningham is. Now, a lot of that was Cade had a horrible last couple of games shooting the ball, and Killian, who's shooting nothing but wide open shots, hasn't missed. I'm certainly not implying that Killian's a better shooter than Cade Cunningham, but I think what frustrated me, at least the last couple of games, even as depleted as they were, they shot well enough to win both of those games. They played well enough to win. I think I can see Monty's system, that 0.5. I think it's slowly starting to take hold with some of the young guys. But the most frustrating thing to me, especially someone that's been a Pistons fan for decades, was just the inability to get stops, the inability to clean the defensive glass. And again, you can point to injuries and say, well, Marvin Bagley, who rebounding is probably his worst thing, probably shouldn't be in the starting lineup. He's starting there because he has to. But, where do we go from here when the lineup is fully healthy? You assume Bojan would start. But there's thoughts that, look, maybe Monty Morris is a better fit for the starting lineup. And if he does make a change to the starting lineup, as well as he's played, I think everyone would agree the odds-on favorite to be removed from the lineup is probably Killian Hayes. So I think it's kind of frustrating for everybody right now to be stuck in this kind of this holding pattern, waiting for this team to get healthy so we can see what Monty Williams' actual plan is. I think they're playing hard. I would like to see a little bit more effort on the defensive glass, because I think they've had a couple of winnable games that they've just let get away from them.
Yeah, that's one thing that Monty was really stressing about, was that they show glimpses of being the team that they could be defensively, but they're not showing the consistency on that end of the court each time. And that, to your point, that is what's the real thing that is really hurting them in that area. And also, too, I know we don't look at Monty and Bogdanovich as maybe defensive guys, but Monty Morris and Bogdanovich as defensive guys, but Monty Williams said that you don't know how they would fit into his scheme defensively as well. So that, again, it all works together.
Yeah. I think we can all agree the one thing that has everyone excited over the first couple of weeks has been Asar Thompson and how amazingly good he has been despite the 3-point shooting struggles. But look, it's a rookie in his first couple of weeks of his career. You're not going to worry about that necessarily, because you drafted him because of it. He projected to be a phenomenal defender, and that's exactly what I think we've actually gotten more than what people expected the first couple of weeks. He's just been fantastic. I think I don't want to call him a foundation piece 8 games into his career, but I really want to, because the things that he's doing on the court are absolutely special.
Yeah, it's not normal. It's not normal for a rookie to be playing defense like this. You know, I've been the best comp I've been saying is like he's playing like a guy who's been in the league for 5 years already. Like, it's defensively. Offensively, obviously, there's some things that you can get better at, but defensively, he plays like a vet, like a guy that everybody fears.
I mean,
go ahead.
Okay. I mean, you got him. The shot, I think that's going to come during time, but you can't teach his effort on defense. I mean, right? I mean, 12 points a game, okay. Would you like to get that to 15, 17 at some point? Cool, but we'll wait for it. But I mean, 9 boards a game at his position, 4 assists. I mean, I believe he's averaging a couple. He's up there in the blocks too as well. And I mean, he has no problem. He takes pride in taking the hardest defensive assignment. To have even Draymond Green spoke so highly of him and his brother. He said those guys coming into the league, they're playing the right way. They're not necessarily looking for their shot. They're looking to be a good teammate and take on that assignment. And for him to do that when the Pistons were lacking a true defender at that true wing defender, I mean, it's a good look for them. So I don't think that's a bad thing in saying he's a foundation piece, because you need a guy that's going to be that selfless on defense.
Thompson's
I just don't like to get ahead of myself when, you know, calling someone a foundation piece after eight games. It's just it's so hard to put everything in context, because he does something incredible every night that I almost never see. But I just want to add one thing before we get into our main topic. I think one thing people are missing, he has played more minutes than any other rookie by, I think he has 40 more minutes than the next rookie on the list of most minutes played this season. Monty Williams cannot keep him off the court. It is crazy how many minutes he's logging, especially when you take into account his job is nonstop motion, guarding the other team's best perimeter threat. He really doesn't get a chance to rest on defense ever. And he's still logging an incredible amount of minutes for a rookie in the NBA. That I think that's the most impressive thing to me, at least so far, aside from his stat line.
Right now he's averaging 2 blocks a game. That's 11th in the NBA. And that's with guys like Anthony Davis, Jaren Jackson, Evan Mobley, Joel Embiid, you know, guys that you expect to block shots.
Seven footers.
Right, 7 footers, and he is not a 7 footer at all. It's really special. Yeah. But yes, let's go ahead
I just had to double check that he is second in the NBA in offensive rebounds per game.
That is insane. Wow.
That is, yeah, I think the last time a small forward did that, don't quote me on this, but probably Dennis Rodman. Like, he was the last guy that played the small forward position that was crushing everybody on the offensive glass like that. That's just it. Like, and that's honestly kind of how he moves. That kind of reminds me of like the heat seeking missile energy, finding the ball all the time. That he kind of reminds me of Dennis Rodman, the way he moves.
Yeah. Special talent. I can't wait to see what that guy's going to do as he continues to grow. But let's talk about what we came here to talk about, the 2018 NBA draft. Keith, start us off with some news and notes before we get into the drafting.
Just a couple of things. The 2018 draft was essentially the end of the process. It was the very last draft that was conducted. Their lottery was conducted under the old rules, which weighted 1 through 15, all separate odds. The team with the worst record had a 25% chance, essentially a 1 in 4 chance of winning the number one pick. After this draft, the odds go all the way down from the worst team from 25%, which is 1 in 4, to 14%, which is essentially 1 in 7. Just a massive decrease. And I think it's that and the play-in game have both reduced the amount of teams that are tanking year in and year out. You still get a few, but I think there's enough of them that are actively participating in the season in March and April, where we don't mind a few teams that are just bottoming out. The other thing, my other note on this is, wow, this is one hell of a draft class.
Yes.
57 players out of the 60 that were drafted played at least one game in the NBA. By my count, over 40 are still playing. A lot of these guys, like 30, I think 39, 38, yeah. I think 39 players have played every season since this draft. It is just a phenomenally deep draft class. We are going to have some fun here.
I have 22 guys on my board for this draft. So
I have 20, but yeah, I could probably put 25 on here. There were some really good names that I just... Yeah, he's not going to get drafted just because this is just too deep a class.
I'll just look at this draft. I'm just like, wow, this is a lot. I didn't even know. I didn't even realize all these guys came out this year.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Corey, we had some drafts in the early 2010s where it was just draft after draft after draft, like 11, 12, 13, 14. We were just like, man, where's the good draft class? Like, we went through a drought. Like a major drought. And then the last couple, 2017, 2018, like these are the drafts right here, 2017, 18, 19. These are the ones that have essentially built the NBA for this decade.
All right. Well, speaking of building the NBA for a decade or longer, I'm going to build up the Phoenix Suns here to make them pretty much unstoppable. The Suns are on the clock, and I'm not even going to waste any time. I'm going to sprint to the podium, and I am going to select Luka Doncic. And a backcourt of Luka Doncic and Devin Booker is born. And I just really don't know how you stop that. I just really don't know how you stop that. Obviously, this team still needs some front court help. That's why they drafted DeAndre Ayton this year. But as we know now, he doesn't even play for that team anymore. So it wasn't going to last long. So that is why I'm taking Luka, because he's the best player in this draft. Pretty plain and simple.
Yeah, the interesting thing with the Phoenix Suns here at number one is, they get to redo the Ayton pick, but they're also not going to get probably not going to get Mikal Bridges at 10. So it's going to be a trade off. But yeah, how does Luka fit with Phoenix? Who really cares? You put Luka, you pair him with a young Devin Booker. Like, that team is not going to win probably for at least a couple more years. But wow, what that would be the best backcourt in the NBA probably in 2 to 3 years. It would be a perfect thing, because Devin Booker is such an excellent catch and shoot guy. He could easily play floor spacer while Luka's on the floor and vice versa. It's just, I love that pairing. I know it's the easy pick, it's a very boring pick, but it's fun to imagine the possibilities.
I feel bad because I just canceled out Devin Booker's 70-point game. Like, there's just no way that happens anymore.
Well, you never know. Okay, so number two pick, and if the Suns wish they could do over the DeAndre Ayton pick, the Kings definitely wish they could redo Marvin Bagley III. No offense, Marvin Bagley. So, yeah, this one's equally you know what? Man, this is not equally easy for me, because the Kings have De'Aaron Fox at this point. Oof. Like, do I go with the excitement, or do I reach a little bit? You know what? I'm going to do this anyway, because I think he is a better player than De'Aaron Fox, and if I have to pick between the two, If it doesn't work, I'm trading De'Aaron Fox. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander goes number two. And I don't even think it's close. He is just so much better than every other prospect I have left on my board. It's weird. Like, if you remember when he was in Kentucky, he wasn't even that impressive. Like, he was seen as an NBA prospect, like a blue, but he was like kind of going through the motions. Like, he was just waiting for his 1 year in college to be over so he could go to the league. And I think he dropped in the draft kind of because of that, because we didn't see the full picture with him. He was just like this really good athlete, this really good prospect, but we didn't see what he could be. But man, his progression every year, like, he has stacked really good progressive years, one after the other, after the other, after the other, to where he's gone from what he was his rookie year in LA, which is being like a really good rotation piece. Now he's a top 10 NBA player, and I don't even think that's disputable. He's one of the best players in the NBA. He gets 2 feet in the paint whenever he wants to. Not the greatest athlete, but he's 6'7", excellent mid-range shooter. How does he pair with the Kings? Like I said, I understand the fit with De'Aaron Fox is rough, but I think they could make it work. I think Shai can play a little bit of he can be like a ball dominant too. And if it doesn't work, I honestly don't care, because I think Shai is a better player than De'Aaron Fox, with all due respect. So one way or the other, I think the Kings are winning here.
Ooh, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Yeah, I really wanted to take somebody that was a better fit, but I kept slapping myself mentally and say, you're not going to pass up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You're just not going to do it. All right, so number three, representing the Dallas Mavericks, who have traded up in this draft from 5 to 3. Our guest, Corey, is now picking on behalf of the Dallas Mavericks. Corey, there is no Luka Doncic for you to take here. But there are plenty of very good players left on the board. I'd like to see who you have in mind.
Yeah, this was I had a plan in case SGA went number two, and I'm just, you know, looking at Dallas. They still needed a darn good point guard to be out there, a guy that can has proven that. I won't say necessarily a guy that can dish the ball that well. I mean, it's always great to have a point guard that can be a great facilitator, but this team needed somebody that could really put the ball in the hoop and can be a game changer. And I'm not going Trae Young. I am actually going to go with a guy that I think when the chips are on the line, I would rather have him. I'm going to go with a guy who actually ended up going to the Mavericks anyway. I'm going with Jalen Brunson.
I love this.
I just think that Jalen Brunson all around is a better basketball player. I mean, when the chips are on the line, this is a guy that I feel that can lift, that can galvanize his teammates, that can get his buckets, and that he just sees the floor a little bit better than Trae Young. Now, Trae Young, you want to go ahead and give him the three. I mean, he shoots him in volume, so he's going to make a lot as well, but I just don't trust him with the team that I'm trying to build, with the team that I thought Dallas would be trying to build out there.
I love this on so many levels, simply because now Luka is not on Dallas in our alternate universe that we've created. So Jalen Brunson he's got the keys to the car instead of being Luka's number two guy. Now, Jalen Brunson is the Maverick for life. He is not Luka Doncic, but as you said, he has proven himself in the playoffs. He has outplayed Donovan Mitchell 2 years in a row in the postseason. He dropped like a rock in the draft simply because he was too short. That's really it. A 6'5 guy that could do what he can do would go in the top five. But just because he was short, everyone thought, including me, thought he would get picked on defense. No, he is a rock solid, tough defender. I see guards trying to back him in all the time, and he is not having it. I love watching Jalen Brunson play.
He's an exciting player.
Not as flashy as Trae Young. Maybe he doesn't have the offensive gifts that Trae Young has, but he's about 3,000% better on defense. And I would argue he is a better equipped player for a playoff series. All right, so circling back a second time, the Memphis Grizzlies, they are drafting number four. They are at their low point, essentially. They're at the end of the Mike Conley, Marc Gasol era, and they are looking to rebuild with this first pick. Mike, what do you got for us?
Well, as you mentioned, the Mike Conley era is just about over. This is going to be his last year with the Grizzlies before he heads over to Utah. And I am going to go ahead and replace him with the guy that I honestly thought Corey was about to take. I'm going to draft Trae Young. Because I think that's a phenomenal point guard that you could start a franchise around. My only concern is that I hope that I'm getting the Trae Young that is standing on the sideline against the New York Knicks and is staring at a crowd that is on top of him, booing him, calling him every name in the book and smiling. That is the Trae Young I want. Not whatever Trae Young has been the last couple of years, which isn't that bad, but I want the killer. I want the killer Trae Young in Memphis. And I think that he's a guy that, you know, as someone who lived in Memphis for a few years, they would love Trae Young out there. I mean, he's like the epitome of Memphis, like style and swagger. And he would be grit and grind all day. Trae Young to the Grizzlies.
Now let me flash forward a year. Grizzlies have Trae Young and the number two pick in the 2019 NBA draft. Do you still draft Ja Morant?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
Okay. You think Ja and Trae Young could play together?
Yes, as long as oh dear God, that's those personalities.
I'm trying to lead you to a spot here, Mike.
Yeah. Can we get Shane Battier back on the team just as like an adult, just to kind of like help out, just to oversee everything? Because, yeah, that would be a very interesting duo there. But it'd be super fun. Like when they're on.
I'm just trying to bring up a possible consequence of your actions here. Look, right now the Grizzlies are an empty slate. You can pick whoever you want because they're rebuilding. But yeah, a year from now, if they retain that number two pick, man, especially because Ja was clearly the second best guy on the board. All right. Now on my end, the Mavericks had this pick. They swapped it to the Atlanta Hawks. So now that I'm the Atlanta Hawks at number five, I have a couple of polar opposite players right at the top of my board. Who am I? You know what? I'm not even going to think about this too hard. The Atlanta Hawks out of Michigan State select Jaren Jackson Jr. And I know a lot of shine has come off of Jaren Jackson Jr. over the summer. Clearly, he is not very well equipped to play center. He is exclusively a power forward and nothing else. But look, what he is good enough to win Defensive Player of the Year and be easily the best, most rangy shot blocker in the entire league. And on top of that, he's a pretty damn good 3-point shooter. Stretch bigs that can lead the league in blocks do not grow on trees. They do not come in every single draft. So while there are guys here that are probably better offensively than he is, I still think he is definitely a guy that you want to build with, unless you can get a true superstar. And I think we've sold out of those already. So I will take Jaren Jackson Jr. I do not care about John Collins one bit. I don't even think did he get drafted by us 2 weeks ago? John Collins? Yeah, I don't remember.
No, he did not. Yeah. No, John Collins surprisingly did not get drafted.
That's the deep of a draft. Trying to make. Yeah, Jaren Jackson Jr. to the Atlanta Hawks. End of story.
That's definitely not a bad pick. Just looking at this Orlando roster, looking at who I got, I have Aaron Gordon. I got another good big guy. I think I'm solid in my front court, Vucevic. But I mean, I know they went with Mo Bamba. I don't think I need him. I just really don't think I need him right now. But who I do think I need, I need somebody that can play either the three or the four. Up, there he goes. I need somebody that can be either my three or my four. I'm taking the personal out of it. I'm going to go with Miles Bridges here.
Okay.
I think he's going to give me. I think he's going to, you know, give me that punch that I need. Stretch three. In today's NBA, you can put him at the four. Solid. He's a solid defender. I think he's more help side than lockdown, but that's okay. And he plays with a nasty streak. I think in Orlando, they need somebody with some personality, and he definitely has a lot of that. So I'm going to go with him.
All right.
Does the Magic get any sort of like compensatory pick for when he gets suspended or anything like that? Or
I don't know.
All right. Oh. Yeah. The less I talk about Miles Bridges, the better, because it's just not going to go on a great road.
Right.
All right. So, yep. Circling around a third time, the Chicago Bulls, and they're still in their weird. We don't know if we're trying to be really good or really bad kind of phase. They just got out of their Dwayne Wade phase. But in any case, they're up next, and they've got the seventh pick. Mike, who do you got?
Well, I think this is going to be relatively easy because, they wound up taking Wendell Carter Jr. this year, which shows me that they needed a center because obviously they have Cristiano Felicio and Robin Lopez, a very old Robin Lopez on their roster at this point. And I know they're going to go after Vucevic here relatively soon. And while Vuce is like a decent player, he's a little bit on the older side, and you could see how this Bulls team is just like one of the oldest teams in the league right now. They're just hanging on. So I'm going to draft DeAndre Ayton to the Chicago Bulls. And I think that, I mean, he's, you know, we see what Ayton can be when he's on. He's a phenomenal rebounder. Right now he actually leads the league in rebounds, which is awesome. And you know, he's a decent scorer as well. Can block some shots. I just think that we haven't quite seen his best. I think that like this kid could be even better than he already is. It just Phoenix just wasn't the best spot for him. And I think maybe Portland could be, and we'll see. But I think Chicago coming out would work for him. Him and Zach LaVine would be a fun little duo.
Now, to be fair, the Bulls originally did draft a center in Wendell Carter Jr. They still shipped him out for Vucevic. Do you think DeAndre Ayton could make the Bulls want to keep him instead of trading him for Vucevic?
I do. And I mean, no. Picks? No disrespect to Wendell Carter Jr., but I he's not DeAndre Ayton. You know, I think Ayton's okay. Just a much better player, especially on the glass. Just kind of comparing, like, you know, right now Ayton is averaging 13 rebounds a game, but he's averaging 10 over his career. Wendell Carter Jr.'s at 8, you know, and is not a good shot blocker at all. So I think that, yeah, I think you definitely keep Ayton and you don't try to ship him off to get Vucevic later.
The one thing about DeAndre Ayton, I think I kind of get where other people were coming from watching Andre Drummond in Detroit. Because, like, yes, he's putting up some monster stat lines, but I still see Chauncey Billups chewing him out a lot when I'm watching Portland Trailblazer games. Like, his concentration level, he still makes like some silly mistakes. He is a hell of a talented player. You're right. He grabs a lot of rebounds. Way better, I think, mid-range shooter than people give him credit for. There's just anytime I watch DeAndre, there's just something about him that's like, man, he could be better, but I just don't know if his head's always in the game. All right. So up next, the Cleveland Cavaliers and how they acquired this pick coming off of the NBA Finals appearance. Does anyone remember?
It had probably had something to do with LeBron.
Oh, in a roundabout way it did. Corey, you remember how the Cavs got this pick?
I do not. I'm trying to draw a blank right now.
They traded a guy by the name of Kyrie Irving. You remember that was when Kyrie decided he didn't want to play with LeBron anymore, and then they held him hostage and got this pick from Boston, which New Jersey, the Nets owed him. Anyway.
And then he decided he didn't want to play in Boston anymore, too.
And then LeBron decided he didn't want to play in Cleveland anymore, so nobody wins. So the Cavs are about to start on their rebuild, get a head start, actually, because they're just coming off of a finals berth. But LeBron is now gone. This is going to be easy for me. The Cleveland Cavaliers out of, I believe, Missouri, select Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr., everybody was scared to death of him on draft day because of the medical issues and the red flags that I believe it was his back. He had problems with his back. But he was, I believe, the number one high school prospect in the country coming into college, and he just never was able to get on the court. So it caused him to fall, I think, out of the lottery, or at least at the end of the lottery in the 2018 draft. But I think he's more than proven himself. It took him a couple of years to really get healthy, but once he's there, he is the top three-point shooter in this entire draft class of anybody, career percentage-wise. And he's 6'10". There's just... Yes, he has some issues on defense. I think he's made progress, some strides on that end. But offensively, man, there is no better number three option in the entire league, I think, than Michael Porter Jr. On a lesser team, I think he's a comfortable number one just for his ability to put the ball in the basket. So I think he pairs perfectly with a rebuilding Cavs team. They don't need him to be on the floor because they're just going for more draft picks. So they can afford to sit on him for a little while and stack lottery picks. And then when he's ready, they'll be ready. So I think, like, putting him on the floor with Evan Mobley, I think that's scary. That's a great 1-2 punch up front if things keep progressing that way. But, yeah, Michael Porter Jr., I'm loving this fit.
Ooh, that was a good pick. That was a real good pick. I like that one. You know, with this Knicks team, it's got a – the Knicks are an interesting organization. They always get a lot of parts that don't fit. I think it's kind of their stock and trade. But Michael Porter Jr. was a guy that I was honestly looking at for there because I just think that, like, you just use everything you said and all. And when healthy, he's a certified bucket getter. But so is this other guy that I'm going to get. You know, New York is very fond of their guards. And right here, I'm going to get a guy that I believe when he's healthy, when he's in a position where he's able to create – For his own shot and just be able to lead a team. Not to back, I don't want to call him a true leader of the team, just be the face of a franchise. I think he could be that guy. I'm going to go with Colin Sexton. I think at that time that the Knicks were just kind of confused on the kind of guards that they wanted to have. They brought in a lot of pieces that just did not work. And I think if you get a guy like Colin Sexton there, over time, you'll be able to maybe break. I think he's a fun and exciting player where when you are the Knicks and you get into free agency and you have, you know, money to throw at players that you – I can't remember who was in the next year's free agency class. I can't remember when they had some money. But if you're able to get some free agents who – kind of buy into what the Knicks are doing. Can we get a guy like Sexton? I mean, at his best, he was a 24-point game scorer. Fast as all – I'm trying to find a word to describe him, but he's fast as all heck from both ends of the court. I'm not going to really have him as the guy that I was going to say be my distributor. He's, you know, he's more of a scorer than a facilitator, so you're probably going to have to look for that either later in the draft or next year's draft, maybe bring somebody in to pair with him. But, yeah, I'm going with Sexton here.
I am so happy. I thought I was the last person that was still a Colin Sexton believer. I'm glad we had you on, Corey.
Yeah, I just Colin don't think Utah's the place for him. I think he needs to be somewhere else.
Well, he's had homes and then he gets hurt. And then, like, he has played well for Cleveland and then he got hurt and then they traded him for a much better player. And then I thought he played really well in Utah, and then he's kind of just been displaced by, again, other players. But it's not, I don't think his, like you said, I don't think his problems have essentially been his fault. He just needs to find a place that really believes in him and isn't just holding on to him, waiting for something better to come along. But yeah, North-South, I think he's, still the most explosive guy, one of the most explosive guys in the league. He's right up there with Jaden Ivey in terms of guys that will beat you in a foot race while dribbling a basketball 94 feet.
Yeah, it's like he had that thing on a yo-yo when he's getting up the court. And then he's a defensive nightmare. I mean, when he's healthy, he's a defensive nightmare. And I think when you just have a guy like that in the Big Apple, you'll be able to, okay, we can go ahead and attract some stars. Like I said, I got to see what that – I wish I looked up and seen what that free agency class was like the next year and what type of money the Knicks would have. But, I mean – I'll take Sexton there.
Remember when he was with Alabama and they were playing Minnesota and he lost his entire team and he was playing, it was him and just like two other guys and they were playing like 3-on-5. I think it was against Minnesota, but yeah, they were playing shorthanded and he almost willed them to a win. I thought that was one of the most incredible things. All right. So circling around again, all right. So, the Sixers originally had this pick, traded it to the Suns. Do you know who originally had this pick? Mike Payton.
I have no idea. Probably the Pistons somehow.
Okay, so originally the Suns actually acquired this pick. They acquired it, traded it, and reacquired it. They originally acquired it from the Los Angeles Lakers in the Steve Nash trade.
Fun one.
That is how long this pick has been swapped around. All right, so Phoenix, we've established the number one pick. They've got Luka Doncic to go along with Devin Booker, just an embarrassment of riches. And I think you've got a lot of great selections here. You have a lot of great options at number 10. So who do you got for us, Mike?
Well, you know, here's the thing. There are a lot of great players left on the board, but you run into here's what we got. We've got a backcourt of Luka Doncic and Devin Booker. And here's who's available. Gary Trent Jr. No thanks. Not yet, at least. Marvin Bagley. Fine center, but we're going to pass. Gabe Vincent. That's not going to, you know, he probably won't get drafted today. Kevin Huerter. Guard, you know, like there's a lot of what the Suns already have or just don't need. I am going to kind of reach here. I'm going to take a guy that you guys might think I'm taking way too early because maybe I don't know, maybe neither of you guys were even going to draft him today. It's a guy that the Pistons actually took in this draft in the second round.
Okay,
I'm taking Bruce Brown with this pick, and I mean, come on, man. Like, the guy is just you love him in Denver. Like, he's great defender. He's the guy that'll throw himself on the floor to get the ball. And like, I mean, he's a great, great teammate. Everybody loved him in Detroit. Everyone loves him in Denver. Just won a championship. Was a big part of that team. I think that no matter who I would have taken here, nobody was going to, like, put the Suns over the top. So that's why I took Bruce Brown, and we could have moved on, and we're moving on to next year's draft. We're not going to win a championship this year, so let's build.
I love Bruce. I loved watching Bruce Brown play, especially in the defensive end of the floor. I thought he was horribly miscast in Detroit as a point guard because they didn't really have one. So I had to watch Bruce Brown navigate 55 pick and rolls a game, which was just, that's the one thing that I, because he wasn't a very good outside shooter. So guys would always go under the pick and roll, and he wound up forcing his way to the basket anyway. Like, none of it was his fault. It was just a situational thing. But yeah, man, what a career that he's carved out for himself coming out of Miami. From, you know, being a second round pick to playing his way into the rotation as a rookie, to being a guy that got playoff minutes as a rookie, and then being a key piece in a championship team 4 years later or 5 years later. It's crazy. But number 11, this pick originally belonged to the Hornets. They traded it to the LA Clippers, who famously selected SGA. That's why to this day fans think that the Pistons had SGA. They didn't, or they could have had SGA with this pick. They didn't, because it wasn't their pick. Their pick was one later. In any case,
Mike, were you aware that Mikal Bridges was still on the board?
I was aware, but I didn't want to stick. Okay. I find it boring when I just pick a player that's already.
No, you're good. You're good. I am definitely going to take Mikal Bridges. I am going to take Mikal Bridges, and I don't really care if Kawhi or Paul George wants to play here. I really don't, if that's a deal breaker, because right now I would rather have Mikal Bridges than Paul George or Kawhi Leonard. Not that he is a more talented player than those two, but he is much younger and much healthier. I think one of Monty Williams' favorite players that he's ever coached, a guy that's a legit two-way monster of a wing, excellent outside shooter, a good scorer. He is worth every penny of that enormous contract that he got. And he was the key, as proof, he was a key piece in a deal that brought Kevin Durant to Phoenix. Not much else you can say. He was actually number five on my big board. He was one of my top five prospects. I love Mikal Bridges.
We're gonna have to get Dime Dropper back on here to talk about the Clippers again, because right now Clippers fans are acting all kinds of crazy, thinking that this team that they just assembled out of broken parts is going to, like, win a championship somehow.
Well, look, if it was 5 years ago, yeah, they'd be the championship favorites. These guys aren't going to stay – like, if this team stays healthy even at their age, yes, they could win a championship. But who wants to put money on that happening? Anybody? Like, we've seen this movie before, right? Okay, then. Like, we love Dime Dropper. I think he's an awesome, awesome person. Great LA Clippers fan, basketball historian, but no, I don't even think he has enough confidence that this team's gonna win it all.
Okay, so representing the Charlotte Hornets, who have flip-flopped here, at number 12 is Corey. Corey, who do you got for us?
Ooh, okay, so I just gotta man, I like how you pick, man. Y'all, I really like how you pick, because you definitely took a couple of guys that I was looking at. I'm like, dang. So, all right, I'm looking at this landscape, and the Clippers. Here's the thing about the Clippers: they never really get it right, and I don't know. I don't know what it is about them. We never really get it right. I believe that's the year they had Pat Bev, and I can't deal with Pat Bev as my Pat Bev is not about to be my point guard for this year. Absolutely not. So
you're picking for the Hornets, Corey.
Yeah, you're
for the Hornets. Oh, I'm tripping.
Yeah, I just picked. Yeah, I just picked.
My bad. I ain't got my glasses on.
You're good.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking. I'm tripping.
Yeah, this was a draft day trade. So they flip flopped.
I kept looking at it. All right. So, I looked at that wrong. Okay, now I got to redo how this. You know what? I still low key may take this guy because I think when you look at him from, I don't think he's really the scorer that you, I think he could become a scorer, but I'm drafting this guy simply because of his, I think he's a tough nose defender. And that, if you know, when you need a guy out there that can be a facilitator who can get you a bucket and who can, just be a good energy guy, I think Dante DiVincenzo fits that role.
Oh,
I like it.
I'm going to go ahead and go with him because you just seen how he was in college. And yeah. I believe that translated over to the NBA. I just don't think that he's really gotten the chance to really be the guy on the team that he would have. When I heard that the Pistons were linked to him, I'm like, you know what? That could be a really good backup to Cade Cunningham. I mean, because you've seen what he's done during his time with the Warriors. So I would go with DiVincenzo right here.
Yeah. I still have not gotten over what he did to Michigan in the 2008 National Championship game. That game was never even a contest. And it's just because he came off the bench. He wasn't even the starter. He was a sixth man. Came off the bench and just destroyed him. Yeah, that was heartbreaking. But yeah, he again, he was a six man. I'm sorry?
I had a good time that night.
I'm sure you did.
Go green.
And I had a good time watching them lose to James Madison Monday. Anyway.
Oh.
So yeah, that was kind of the knock on him though, that he couldn't even start on his own college team because his defense wasn't very good. And in the NBA, I think he's actually been a plus defender. The only question has really been his health. He's kind of bounced around a little bit, but it's not because teams don't want him. It's just I don't know. I guess they just ran out of room for him, and he's too valuable, and he's making a little bit more money than a guy that's like the 9th, 10th, 11th. He needs to be, if not a starter, a 6th, 7th man. And I worry that he's going to run into that problem on the Knicks too with Josh Hart and just get stuck in a minutes crunch. But yeah, in a vacuum, like I thought he was awesome for Golden State last season. They just couldn't afford to keep him. Yeah, and look, he will have no problems finding minutes on the Hornets, who drafted Malik Monk here anyway. So
yeah.
So you're good on that. They had Malik Monk. They drafted Miles Bridges. But in any way, he's better. I think Dante is better than Malik Monk. All right, so. Back up again, the LA Clippers, a second time. They've got Mikal Bridges in the fold. Mike, for your final selection of this 2018 redraft, who do you got for us?
Well, you know, it breaks my heart that I'm going to have to do this, but I'm going to have to – because I'm really a big fan of the situation where a guy gets drafted exactly where his dad played. And that being Gary Trent Jr.
Yeah,
I am going to select him to play for the Clippers here because I think him and Mikal Bridges is a pretty good start. Like Trent's not going to light up the scoreboard every night, and he's not a superstar or anything like that. But he's a guy that's going to try pretty damn hard, and that's what I enjoy about him. And I think that's why Toronto's kept him around so long, and he was a part of that championship team because of that, And I think that the Clippers are going to screw it up, as Corey said anyways. They're going to screw it up later anyways. But this is a pretty good start for them.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. We have a couple of father-son combinations in this draft that the father played absolutely and the son play absolutely nothing alike. We have Jaren Jackson Jr. His father, Jaren Jackson, was a three-point sniper, a spot-up shooter as a two-guard, won a championship with the Spurs. Obviously not Jaren Jackson Jr. Likewise, Gary Trent Jr. He's a two guard. He is a pure shooter, a two-way three-point shooter. If anyone remembers Gary Trent Sr., remember what his nickname was?
I don't.
He played at Ohio. They called him the Shaq of the Mac. did not live up to that nickname in the NBA. He was only like 6'9", 250. Like in the Mac, that makes you look like Shaq. In the NBA, you're a seventh man. But yeah, Gary Trent Jr. There's not much I can say about him other than he's an incredibly valuable player. He needs to get out of maybe Toronto for a little while. I don't think they value him as much as they should.
You know, the thing all is, right. I feel really old at the moment because I've got Gary Trent's rookie card, like his dad, like 5 feet away from me right now. And I had that in the 90s, you know, as a kid, like, and now their kids are playing. And before you know it, it's going to be, you know, Tim Hardaway IV out there. And it's like, damn, I'm just getting old. And LeBron James' son is going to start playing in the NBA soon. Like, we're all going to die at some point, guys.
Okay, on that note. All right, so I think I have the toughest pick in this entire draft now that I'm looking at it. Number 14, the Denver Nuggets. And as I mentioned before, they famously took Michael Porter Jr. originally fell to them at this spot. So they've got their championship combo, Nikola Jokic. All right, so who am I going to fit with these two guys? And the thing is, it's not like you can replace Michael Porter Jr. with just anybody. Like, who am I going? I can't replace him with who I have left. So who is a guy that would be just a really, really good fit? You know, I'm going to take Anthony Simons. Anthony Simons, again, it's not an ideal fit because, yeah, he's not a power forward. But I'll tell you what he is. He is an amazing offensive creator, high efficiency, can shoot it, can drive to the basket, can create. His defense is terrible. I'm hoping in Denver they will coach that out of him more than Portland has. I think the one thing that's really held him back other than his defense has been just the injuries. But man, just he is capable of putting up 20 points a game easily if you put him in the starting lineup, and he can do it comfortably, like without a sweat. So I think putting him on Denver, I still think that they would have a need for a forward that can really shoot, really can really score. But Simons, I think, could do his part. I think they would change a little bit, but I still think it would be very, very good with Anthony Simons. All right. So, with our final, we will still have a ceremonial pick, but for our final pick, the 15th, fittingly belongs to our guest Corey, who I think has been awesome today. The Washington Wizards, and they're kind of at the end of the rope here. they've been at the end of their rope for 5 years. They just pretend that they're doing okay when they're not. Over the summer they finally admitted it when they let Bradley Beal go. But yeah, they're kind of entering into purgatory here. So Corey, who do you got for us?
Well, you know, during this draft, I believe it was like right after the draft, the Wizards they sent, you know, Gortat. They shipped Gortat out. And when you do that, you're lacking some size. And I mean, you know, I got Bradley Beal. You got John Wall. You're hoping those guys can be healthy. But I'm going to bring in a guy that I think if he got into a starting role off the bat, he would have needed to grow a little bit more offensively as far as his IQ. But I think that, you know, what he does have is he has crazy athleticism. He can finish around the rim a little bit. Defensively, I've seen him do some things that I liked last year in the playoffs with the Boston Celtics. I'm going to go Robert Williams here.
Oh. I was picturing someone totally different as you were describing him. But yeah, Robert, well, the Time Lord, yeah, he definitely applies.
I mean, he's nasty around the rim, shot blocking. I mean, I just think that when you're having a team like that with the Wizards, who they already have the dominant backcourt, and you're planning on trading, you know, Gortat, you're losing some size. So if that's the move, I'm okay. I'm picking Robert Williams here.
All right. No, no, that makes sense. Like I said, the Wizards are just kind of entering into this purgatory phase where there's really no bad picker. You just want to pick, you know, who's going to be the best player for the next like 3, 4, 5 years. Well, the team just crumbles around like a house of cards. All right. So, Corey, we forgot to mention this to you at the beginning of the show. We do, anytime we do a redraft and the Pistons have not picked in the top 15, we do a ceremonial pick.
Okay.
So we just do a fake trade where the Pistons, for whatever reason, get the 16th pick. They originally had a pick. They missed the playoffs, but they traded it in the Blake Griffin deal. So assuming they trade, you know, whoever to get the number 16 pick, of anyone remaining in this draft class, I mean, I see a couple of amazing fits here, given where the franchise is going. But do you have anyone in mind? Mike, you can chime in on this too.
I do, but I want to see if Corey has someone first.
Okay. I'm interested to hear Corey's thoughts.
Give me one. You can go ahead and go ahead of me because I'm not going to get him this pacified real quick.
Okay. All right, Mike, who do you got?
All right, Keith, do you want to do that thing where we do the 3-2-1 and then we both say our guys at the same time, see if we're on the same page?
All right. I don't know that we are because there are multiple good fits here.
Well, we'll see. All right, ready?
All right.
Three.
Sorry, hold up.
I got it. I'll do the count. Three, two, one. Grayson
Mitchell
Allen.
Robinson. Oh. See, we didn't. No, all right, so I get it. This is the 1 year that the Pistons are going to make the playoffs with Blake and Andre and Luke Kennard. But yeah, we know that Andre's on his way out. I think Mitchell Robinson would be an excellent replacement. Also, I feel dirty that Wendell Carter Jr. hasn't been selected. He is a really, really, really good basketball player. He would have gone in the top 10 in like 9 of our last 10 drafts. I think it's just a testament to how deep this freaking class is. But yeah, I think I don't want anyone listening at home to think, man, did they forget when Wendell Carter Jr. existed? No, it's just this class is just really good. And there was just not a great fit for him at the bottom. But yeah, like you said, Grayson Allen would have been a great fit too, because as much as people hate Grayson Allen, and I know a lot of people do because he's kind of a dirty player, he is one hell of a defender, and he can knock down the open shot too. There's a reason he keeps getting work despite people wishing he was no longer in the league.
That's actually why I wanted to take Grayson Allen, is because of how dirty he is. And I mean, that fits the Pistons just so well. It's like he's like this generation's Bill Laimbeer a little bit. I mean, he's not going to... He's not as good as Bill Laimbeer, I guess, but like he's dirty. He'll get in your face and he'll like get in your ear and he'll chop block a guy. You know what I'm saying? He'll go out there and do something dirty that's going to help the team. And sometimes that's all right if it's a guy that's playing on your team.
Corey, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I do have a player to add. That was not a guy that I went with. I was going to go with a guy. I think that the Pistons still needed a shooting guard probably for the future. I'm still not really a fan of what you call it. I mean, I know they end up having a Bruce Brown, so I know he played point, kind of a point, sometimes role, sometimes shooting guard, but I'm going to go Gary Trent Jr. here.
He was already picked.
Yeah.
I'm tripping. I'm sorry, the kid threw me off. You know what? I had another one then too. And hold on, let me go make sure that hope you guys didn't pick this guy. Hold on, let me just make sure he's right there still. Because who did you do? You said Mitchell Robinson, correct?
I said Mitchell Robinson. He said Grayson Allen.
Got you. So this is the other guy to pick. 3-point sniper. He did well when he was with the Hornets. I'm gonna go Devontae Graham.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually,
that's a good one.
The reason why I'm not going to take up too much of your time with this response, but I think the reason I really like that pick is because the Pistons, for the entire Reggie Jackson era, had an issue with guys whenever he got hurt, and he was hurt this season, no one could step in and play and start at point guard. They just couldn't do it. Devontae Graham say what you want about him. He's kind of a journeyman, but he can start at point guard for you.
He's a tiny, he's a real, real tiny dude, but he is a baller's baller. I mean, yeah. I believe at the one point with the when he was with the Hornets, he was averaging he did not average 20 points per game, but he was just below it. I believe around 18 points per game, something like that. Is a career 36% from the three, and the Pistons definitely needed that season. He's more of a scorer type, not a guy that was really facilitator, but I didn't really look at Reggie Jackson that much as far as facilitating as well anyway. So yeah. When he's out of the game, that when he's injured, they pretty much did not have anybody that could go get their shot. And as small, as miniature as Graham is, he could go get his shot.
Yep. I agree.
Well, that is going to wrap up the 2018 NBA draft. A couple notable players that did not get picked in this draft. Moritz Wagner, Lonnie Walker, Duncan Robinson, Gabe Vincent, Kevin Huerter, Wendell Carter, the 2K legends, Svi Mykhailiuk. I mean, that guy was incredible on 2K. Like, he could hit a three from anywhere. It's like Steph Curry, the Russian Steph Curry or whatever. I'm not sure if he's Russian or not, but just guessing. But yes, that is going to do it for the 2018 draft. Corey, please take this time. I know you got a baby right to the side of you, but take this time, please, to just, tell people what you're working on, where they can find your work, your Twitter and all that good stuff.
Well, currently what I'm working on is a little kid right here, but on my actual work, just getting ready for this Lions Chargers game, and then actually getting ready for this Bucks game tonight. And then on Friday, we host the 76ers. They're going to have the in-season tournament. I'm still trying to figure out what this whole thing is about. It's so confusing. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram, Corey E. Woods, KoreyEWoods. On M Live, just look me up on all the Pistons articles and for a couple of things just throughout the week as far as Lions.
There you go, man. And once again, shout out to Corey. He covered our podcast for M Live back when we had Isaiah Thomas on, and we really appreciate that. But we will see you guys next week. We don't know what we're doing yet, but we'll see you then.